Listen up. We are back with another episode of the Construction Mentor Podcast. My name is Ike. I am your host. You can follow me on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube at the Construction Mentor. You can catch this podcast on all major platforms, but for the most part, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. Now, what are we here to do? We're here to promote the construction industry. We want everybody to be aware of the opportunities to live an affluent life, whether you want to go to work and work for somebody else, or you want to take that weight on your shoulders and start your own business. We want to make sure that you're aware of those opportunities and how to tackle them. If you're already in the industry, we want to make sure that you understand how to climb that ladder and take your career to the height that we want it to go to. So with that, we have a special guest today, Natasha. Natasha is obviously a woman in business. She has successfully built her own seven-figure business in the construction industry in Southern California. A unique business. I don't think a lot of young people would be aware of her role in the industry and what she does and what that looks like. So it's going to be a great conversation. We're going to take it from the beginning all the way up through to where she is today and where she wants to go beyond. So Natasha, how are you?
Hello. Good. Nice to see you and meet you.
I've been following her on Instagram for a long time, and we've messaged back and forth a little bit. And I think the first thing that caught my eye was your handle, Mamapreneur.
Yep, right. Mom, so, and owning a business, mompreneur.
Which I love, because I'm a young father, and any minute now, my wife might come in here right now and my daughter will be here. Hopefully we get the whole episode in. So tell me about your business from a high level, and don't get too deep though, because I wanna go to where you started. So what is it exactly that you do?
Right. So I am in the K-12 and higher education sector. So all school districts and all community colleges, because here in California, we have a governing agency called DSA, Division of State Architect. Our building code is very strict. We are in an earthquake zone. So DSA oversees all these school sites. And what we do is, if projects were not built per plan, the state will not give them a, certificate of occupancy, AKA compliance. So we go in and look at the letter and see what were the issues. And most of them are tons of punch list items that have to do with fire life, structural, and access. So the ADA wasn't done right, or the sprinklers or the fire alarm systems weren't completed right, or structural, they were supposed to build it this way, but structurally they built it this way. So our whole goal is to get everything on the list done properly, maybe rebuild, reconstruct. That's the worst, but sometimes it needs to get done, and then get it back to into the state. So on a big pick level, we've helped over 60 school districts in the state of California, over 10 community colleges. And right now we have about 450 projects ongoing with a team of eight. Yeah, I know. Wow. It's a lot.
So you hit on a couple things there. And I want to just point out to especially the young people who aren't in the industry exactly what you're talking about, right? Yeah. So she's in a sector, right? The sector that she just talked about was the public sector, specifically schools. So you can go private or public, and private would be if you were doing something for like a Facebook, a Nike, or some sort of large private company. Well, in the public world, you have government buildings, it's government funded projects and stuff like that, right? So that's the world that she's talking about specifically with schools. Now, she did mention that California can be tough to build in, and it can be. So there's earthquake codes, there's Title 24, ADA. which may or may not still exist, but there's different environmental codes basically, right? So me as a general contractor, I work in every market, right? I have I'm all over. There's no way for me to understand all of the codes everywhere in the country. Like, that would be some sort of hard. Like Rain Man autistic level like stuff, right? For me to be able to do that. So what Natasha's talking about is that she is the local expert, right? People pay her for her expertise, just as though you would pay an accountant or a real estate person if you were going into a new market or doing your taxes, or if you were a lawyer, you needed a lawyer to step into a courtroom, especially if they wanted to understand local law, right? So that's what she does. Now, you're primarily working directly for you're representing the town itself.
I'm representing the school district, because let's say, the Los Angeles region, the Los Angeles County, there's LAUSD, Inglewood, Hawthorne. So we work with the specific school district, because that's who's in charge of their area. Yeah.
Right. So she's representing the taxpayer and the entity, right? Make sure that everything meets code and that it's a safe building and that, you know, everything goes well once we have kids occupying the building, right?
Yeah, if there's an 8.5 earthquake, think about it this way too. I always try to explain the why behind it. If there's an 8.5 earthquake here, what are safe havens in California? Hospitals and schools. So they're mm-hmm. built under the same building code. And if everything was to collapse, we need to get the community to the school sites to get them fed mm-hmm. emergency, because what if the hospitals are overflowing, or what if people don't have anywhere to stay? So that's also like the big why behind it. And in 1930 or 1940, there was the Long Beach earthquake, and most of the schools in Long Beach, Compton area, they were flat as a pancake. If you Google mm-hmm. 1930 Long Beach earthquake, it would have been the biggest catastrophe for children ever. Like, it would wow. have been the most horrible thing in history. But thank God it happened like
they weren't
on
there.
That evening, and they weren't there. So that's what they learned from. They're wow. like, no, we got to change this. I say definitely Google it and look at the school sites. And back then it was brick, all these little bricks. Yeah. Guess what? California, we don't really do that anymore. Why? Structural integrity of the building.
Yeah. Imagine Jenga being set up on a table and then you shake
the
table.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. Yeah.
So, this could go in so many good directions. Does this also cover like active shooter situations or anything like that?
Very interesting you brought that up. When districts go for a local bond, you have to convince the community, if you pay 3% taxes on your home, what are you going to do to the school sites? Are we going to get a new football field, a new stadium? And you do a poll, because it takes a lot to get a local bond to pass in your city and where your district zoned. So when they do outreach, they were asking the communities, what is it you want upgraded at our schools? And boom, you just said it, school safety. Mm-hmm. They wanted more cameras. They wanted better fencing, better lockware. And so now when local bonds are passing, they are putting that language in there, because that's what they mm-hmm. also have to spend it on. And a lot of schools are upgrading that, because it's so scary to send your kid, you know, to school now, not just for, oh, in case an earthquake, let's make sure it's safe. No, let's send our kids to school now and make sure if there is an active shooter, how is it immediately going to go in lockdown and protect all the kids? So right. Yes, that's also now in the bonds of construction.
Gotcha. So yeah, I've only done one school. I did a high school in Marco Island, and I didn't even realize there was certain buttons, different places, and, you know, boards were of a certain spec, and like, that's weird. That's not really called for. And they were like, oh, well, in an active shooter situation, it would be. And I'm like, oh, okay. I get it now. It's just not something it's just not something that the average person thinks of. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have to, especially in construction, regardless of what mm-hmm. the niche is, what could go wrong?
Yeah.
And people need to be protected in the most extreme situation. Once in a lifetime thing, once in a 100-year thing, you know, people have learned those lessons the hard way. And that's why we have the codes and things that we have. So take me back. Let's take a step back, because you are very clearly a wealth of information, knowledge. And I think you're around my age. So you haven't been around that. Okay. Yeah. So you're under 40. So you're very young for the construction industry, right? So you've been able to acquire a ton of knowledge and expertise very quickly, and obviously to be very successful in your own business. So how did it start? What was Natasha like in high school? Were you in California? What was life like for you?
Yeah, so I went to Ayala in Chino Hills, and I did really good up to the age of 15, 16. Mm-hmm. I got really good grades. I wanted to go off to college, but there was a lot of home stuff happening. And so at the age of 15, I decided to emancipate my parents and divorce them, because just the home environment at that time wasn't great. And I said, mm-hmm. I have two options. I either stay in this environment and wait it out 3 more years, or I go to court and divorce my parents, and I can choose to live my life the way I want. And it was very tough. I was homeless 3 times. I slept on a lot of couches. Wow. Even
at
when
15.
Yeah, at 15. I wow. even graduating, I didn't walk with my class. I went on independent studies mm-hmm. and graduated on my own. And a lot of people, you know, really don't know that about me. But I knew, like, I had this fire in me to become something. And mm-hmm. so I got into mortgage right before the boom hit, 2008. You know, I was 18 years old, making like $6,000 a month, living in Newport Beach on Balboa. And then nice. Boom, that's not how real life works, right? And then the housing market hit, crashed. And I was just like, I need a job. Because again, I had no one to fall back on but me since I was 15. And so I got a job being a dispatcher at an engineering firm. And I was about 21 years old. And that's how I got into construction. And I would pick up the phone and they would say, we need a welding inspector in downtown LA for 4 hours. We need an ACI tech inspector at this site pulling, you know, concrete samples. I need a masonry guy for a week, for 2 weeks, because we're going to be laying block and brick. And I had to learn really quick about code. Google was my best friend. And when the inspectors would come in to get their jobs, I was able to ask them questions, what was happening in the field, because I was behind a desk all day. But that taught me construction. And then I had two mentors there. One taught me about welding and concrete and masonry and epoxy. And my other mentor there that was signing off on the jobs, he taught me everything about soils and project management. So even though I did not go to college, I have a certificate in construction technology. I went to UCLA and took project management classes through their extension. That's where I got like my quote unquote real life hard knock, you know, hard knocks of life internship was at Corey Engineering.
There is so many avenues that I want to take with what you just said. I'm going to try to hit them all. I'm going to try to keep them at the top of my brain. Okay. So at the beginning in high school, you clearly had some stuff going on, right?
I had a lot.
There was a turbulent home. I came from a turbulent home. I didn't want to be home when I was in high school. I would stay out. I'd stay on people's couches for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
I would, you know, stay at the local pizza place until it was 10, 11 o'clock at night and the parents were asleep and that sort of thing. Right.
Yep.
So I know what that can be like and not really be comfortable being at home. And that's where you're supposed to be. That's where you're supposed to be protected and comfortable.
You're safe here.
What would you say, especially to a young woman in that situation? You know, they're kind of looking up like they don't know what to do. They probably feel alone, like nobody's out there for them. As somebody that went through that yourself, you know, regardless of the career, what would you say to somebody like that?
I would say, you know, whether you're in high school or a young woman, we live in the most beautiful time of technology where you could get so many resources. You could listen to podcasts about other women who've been through it, how to get through it. There's free therapy now where literally you could maybe go to your school or go to a college and seek a counselor on how to get through that. We live in a time too of mentorship where you could reach out to someone and get a mentor and they will guide you where to go. And last but not least, someone just brought this up to me last week. They're like, besides mentoring, let's start sponsoring people where we're getting them into places and helping them get contracts and helping them get jobs. And I was like, I like that. And so that's my new philosophy too, is not how can I only mentor someone, how can I sponsor them? And so with that, like I say, it's, you know, exactly like you asked me, where are you? Where do you want to be? What questions do I need to ask myself or others who know it to create that that plan of action to get out of my hellhole? Because you and I, we probably grew up in a very much of a hellhole where it was hard for us at that age when we're supposed to be home and being loved and nurtured and feeling safe. But because we didn't feel that way, we're like, okay, we got to go in survival mode for ourselves. And so, that time it was AOL was out, you know, that's how I found.
Young people don't know about that.
No. And I took a taxi to court, a taxi, not an Uber, a taxi that cost me $80.
I just had my last guest who the episode's coming out tomorrow. He was a low voltage electrician. And we started talking about DSL and when that came up and how that was like, boom, totally lightning speed. Right? So, you know, one thing that I found in talking to young people, and I agree with everything you just said, if there's one message, it's like, you are not alone. There's resources out there. Everyone has negative things to say about social media, but it's only negative if you use it for negative things and put negative things in your brain. There's so many positive resources, right? Now, a lot of young people feel embarrassed or feel like they got the short end of the stick or because of where they came from. You know, that it's like an oppression that they can never overcome. I have a feeling that you are as tenacious and successful as you are today. It probably has to do with the pressure that you were under at that age. Would you agree?
Yeah, my mom died when I was 4. So I was in a lot of, you know, and when I say my mom I have now, she's my bonus mom. She's my stepmom. I don't like saying that because we're in a really good place now. But when I was younger, my mother died when I was 2 months before my 4th birthday. Her birthday was actually yesterday. I'm not going to tear up, but you know, it was really hard being a kid and like being different homes with family because my dad could not take care of us. And so constantly I was in that survival mode since I was 4. But like you said, all those things made me who I am today. And I do not ever want to go back in time and change my story because I wouldn't be who I am today, you know, with all that. So,
And you know, when you try to find a purpose, you know, I tell all young people that the difference in your life will be the purpose that you're serving, right? Maybe you don't love doing documents for government facilities, but maybe that enables you to serve a greater purpose. you know, I know part of your platform is to help women get in the industry and realize opportunity and all that stuff, right? Well, that you're qualified in a certain way now that enables you to be of service to other people that not everybody will always be able to match, right? Like, I'm on this podcast. I've been mentoring high school kids for a decade, right?
Amazing.
But you are qualified to connect with young women a different way than I am, right? Yes. Like, I just won't be able to do it. It's the same way, you know, when I talked to, I brought a guy from a plumber that I know, and he's from Haiti. He grew up in Haiti. He's seen some stuff, right? It's different environment that he grew up in, but he will be able to connect with young Black men better than I will.
Exactly.
You know, so what am I trying to say here? If you're young, no matter what situation you're in, number one, you're not alone. Number two, whatever you're going through, it can be a positive thing and it can serve as a purpose if you let it. It can qualify you to bring a different value to your community. So don't let that get you down.
The thing I want to say about that is, you know, sometimes you grow up in the most unhealthy environments and you don't know how to detach or change. Because as a leader, you and I both know probably the way we grew up, we could never show up like that as a leader or a parent. But you have these habits, you have this environment you grew up in. You're like, how do I change this? How do I leave that toxic trauma of my family? And how do I not give that to my children? Or how do I not come show up as a leader as that? And I'm a huge advocate. Go to therapy if you can to, you know, address it and get a life coach and a mentor. And those three things made me become who I am. I never would have been able to change and become the woman I am today if I did not do those things in that way, 1,000%.
I struggled personally with the relationship with my mother until I was about 28, 29 years old. I made it pretty far down the road of life, right?
Yeah,
you know,
and
thankfully my wife convinced me to go to therapy because, and she didn't want to be the one to point certain things out to me, but she knew. She was like, you don't even realize some of the stuff that you went through and why it was bad and how it affects you today. And until I was able to identify that, and I'm very glad that I didn't become a parent at a very young age because I'm aware of that now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I, like you said, you can become the leader that you wish you had. So and the parent that you wish you had, you don't have to be a product of your environment.
We both know our parents did the best they could with what they knew. Like, that was my healing moment. My parents did the best they could with what resources they had and what they knew. And then you change your life from that point.
Right. You want to build yourself up to a higher level. And then hopefully, you know, that transcends through the generations. So now you're looking at going to college, not going to college. It just seemed like you had too much going on and probably not enough guidance at the time. That obviously, you know, that I don't think that you have to go to college to be successful, clearly. But I think a lot of people would have said, oh, like, why didn't you go to college? And whether it was money or guidance, you know, it's just not the way that it went for you. So what would you say to a young person today that may or may not want to go to college? Should they go? Is it required for success? What do you think?
I think it totally depends on the goals that you have and want. And it depends on your personality. So I kept trying to go to college numerous times. And it's funny, I was not diagnosed with ADHD till I became a mom. It came out full-fledged. But then when I learned about it, I was like, oh my gosh, this explains. It's not an excuse. It's an explanation for why I couldn't stick with like long term certain attention things. And school was one of them. Unless hyper-focused, right? We become hyper-focused when we love something. There were certain classes I loved in college where I got an A because I was obsessed about it. But, you know, going back to your question is, no, I feel you do not have to go to college to be successful. I do feel you absolutely need to get in a trade program or a certificate program, and then you need to take courses based on what you need. If you don't know how to write well, guess what? You're not going to be able to write good proposals. If you don't know basic math, guess what? Your proposals and your numbers are going to be off in your business, and you're going to be, you know, probably out of business in a couple months or screw up on a proposal that could really cause you to lose more money in your business. Let's, you know, communication. If you don't know how to communicate and take communication classes, how are you going to be able to speak as a project manager or speak as a business owner? So yes, if you don't want to get that four-year degree, then take a certificate and pick classes that you need in order to get you to where you want to be. And at the end of the day, that's who you're going to become, is everything you put into that.
Funny, I didn't realize this. I got my MBA at Concordia in Irvine.
Congratulations.
And, you know, like, it's great. I got my MBA. That's cool. I guess I got the paper somewhere in my house. But the biggest value that I got out of it was learning from the other people in the room. And I find it interesting that with your career path, you were getting experience and then realizing, it sounds like, where you needed to improve and what education would be applicable to what you were doing. right? Yes. So you were in the industry, and then you were learning, and you had mentors, and then you're like, oh, project management course. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now that helps. And you had real world context to put with it.
Yeah.
I think we've messed up the structure of education to like go sit in a classroom for a bunch of years with no real world experience and no context, then come out and then, you know what I mean? It's all theory. Until like when I went and got my MBA, I had 10 years of work experience, and I had a ton of context. And then context, not only that, but to share with other people in the room.
Yeah.
You know? I find that interesting.
You know, it is. And, you know, I tell everyone, like, knowledge is potential, but execution's power. So you're learning all this theory, but how are you going to apply theory to what mm-hmm. you're learning, your you know, your field, like your mastercraft, like what you're trying to do. And if you can't, then it's never going to like click together. So
right.
I try to tell people, like, if you're going to go to college or something, try to make it and apply it to something you're going to be doing in life.
Yeah.
Or,
right.
You know, what's the point?
Yeah. You don't need to throw yourself in. Nobody needs help throwing themselves in a bunch of debt. So.
Yeah. Yes.
So you were 21, you're working at this mm-hmm. company, and you started a company at 23. Is that the company you're still owning and operating now?
Yes. So I was working at Corey, and I was working at a bar at night in Chino called Godfather's. And I was just, it's Manzlow's hierarchy of needs. I was just trying to put a roof over my head and get by. And then 2 years into my job, I learned about this really big problem, the DSA closeout certification. And I mm-hmm. thought to myself, I'm going to start this as a side hustle while I'm at this company. And I spoke to the owners and I told them there was nothing I was doing behind their back. They were fully supportive of it. But then when I reached 26, 27, I had so many side clients, I could not do both jobs anymore. And I felt, you know, like I was cheating on Corey in a way, the main company I worked for. And I had to make a decision. Do I stay or do I go? And when I put my 2 weeks notice in, the owner, who meant really well by this, he said, you're taking a risk on jumping and leaving. Why don't you stay here and we'll take this percentage and you take this? And I was like, no, I want to, again, the 15-year-old in me, I want to do this on my own. He's mm-hmm. like, fine, but you're a woman in construction. That is difficult. And again, this is all truth. He's not saying things to be mean. You do not have an education, which I did not. I had a certificate. You don't know what it's like to own a business. And the chances of you succeeding are very slim to none. All those things that he said sound horrible, but at the end, they were all true. Mm-hmm. Women that do 7 figures, 3%. Women of color, 1%. So again, he wasn't lying, right? I, of course, left like really scared, but I thought to myself, what the hell do I have to lose? And so I did take that jump. And now, fast forward, that was 10 years ago. Here I am now with, we're going to be going on 11, you know, 10 employees, a team of 11. And I've been in business now on my own with, you know, employees now for 10 years. I'm supposed to be out of business by now. You and I both know the longer you're in business, you're supposed to be like out of business by that point. But no, like here I am. Yeah.
That's incredible. You know, kudos to you and good for you. I mean, no good story starts with somebody looking down the street and seeing all green lights, right?
Yeah.
And it's not if things happen, but it's when things happen. But all the good stories, they all start the same way. It's everybody telling them no and nothing making sense. But with the right purpose, you know, the right drive and the right value you bring into other people, it will work. The equation will work, right? And I think what happens with a lot of young people in that come from, you know, turbulent situations or tough backgrounds, there's less fear, right? I think fear is a big problem for a lot of people that grow up in comfortable situations.
Yes.
They have been comfortable for so long that there's never been any risk around them. Yeah. And I don't, like, you were 23 and you had somebody that has been around the block telling you this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
But you're like, you're like, fuck it. I was almost at 15. I was almost at 15. Like, how much worse can it get than that? Like,
exactly.
You know, I'll figure it out. And you did. And now look at you. You're no college. You're homeless at 15. And 20 years later, you have 11 other mouths that you're feeding and running a 7-figure business. That's incredible. Good for you.
Thank you.
So from there, talk about the industry then versus the industry now. Is there a difference from what was 15 years ago? 09, 08. Is there a
big difference
for women in the industry? What do you see?
I see so much change. I see there, we still have obviously so much more to do, but I see way more women in my industry, right? School construction and community colleges in California. Mm-hmm. I see way more women in leadership, more than I did mm-hmm. when I started. I see more women of color in leadership, which is a beautiful thing to see because, again, mm-hmm. I always say this word wrong, representation. I don't know why I can't say that word. Matters because when you see someone like you up there making it, you're like, okay, if they can do it, I can do it. I'm seeing more women starting their businesses, which is a beautiful thing. So yes, we're seeing more. And I think as women, we need to realize there's enough work for us. It's not mm-hmm. a scarcity thing. We're like, okay, is there enough room to share? And then I learned being a business owner, being a woman and being Latina, it is a blessing. There's so much government work besides schools that we mm-hmm. can, you know, go after because they have to meet their small business diversity, women owned. And I'm like, there's plenty of opportunities for someone.
Especially when it comes to government work, especially when it comes to public work.
Yes, exactly. So that's what I've seen over the past 10 years, or 15, 18 now.
You know, one of the things that you just mentioned that I do like to point out is, you know, gender pay gap is a big thing that people like to talk about.
Oh, I'm going to get excited to talk about this one.
So according to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, it's mm-hmm. much smaller gap in construction as opposed to 82 cents or 77 cents, depending on where you look. The dollar for women to men in the construction industry, it's 95 cents. So it's much smaller. But I personally think that that is about to flip because of what you just said. There are more women in leadership positions now than there was 15 years ago. And in another 15 years, that trajectory is going to happen, right? So for the last 15 years, that gap, I mean, with more women coming in the industry, you have to start at the bottom, right? Like you're not going to get paid top dollar. So the more faces that you see up top, like yourself, you know, that's going to flip. Would you agree?
I beyond agree. And I think as women, number one, I hate it when women say, this is my worth. This is my worth. No, mm-hmm. you need to start saying, this is the value I bring to the project. This is the value I bring to the company. And then we need to start, of course, realizing how much when we do bring that value to the table, what we can charge for it. I did have, when I first started out with my contracts, I was partnering with this company and this guy said, no one's ever going to pay you that hourly rate. They only pay me, you know, $85 an hour. Why would they pay you $125? And again, because of everything I'd been through, I was like, I know the value I bring to our clients and everyone. Here is what I'm charging. But imagine many women that would have listened to that, planted that seed in them, and then not, you know, obviously charge the rates that they feel that they bring. So I'm always telling women, like, you need to be your own advocate. You need to realize what you bring. You need to fight for yourself for that.
So I think that a lot of young people have that issue with not really understanding their worth. And they think that fighting for that means going on Glassdoor and saying the average person's, you know, in my position makes 100 grand or 150 grand. Mm-hmm. What does fight for that mean? I mean, it's more than a strong conversation. Right. Yeah. What would you say to somebody that's like young and in that situation?
Right. So let's just use a scenario. Let's say, you know, the value that you bring to a company, you know how to read plans, you know, project management, you know how companies work, you know, numbers on your projects, and the position that you want is going for, you know, anywhere from 70 to 80,000. If you know that you bring the value of 3Xing that 80,000, because I'm a numbers person at the end of the day, so are you. And I try to explain to everyone, you got to know numbers to know the value that you're bringing to it. If you're like, okay, I'm getting this position's 80 grand. I'm at least going to bring in 3 to 4X of that. Yes, mm-hmm. that is a valuable person. That is a valuable thing. But if you don't even know how to put all that together and you're just like, well, here's the work I do and you're not going to be able to fight for yourself because you don't mm-hmm. know those things. So here at PSS, we have so many measuring systems of what everyone produces for the company, how hard they work, what they work on, what our gross profit is for the projects that they did, what our net profit is for the company. And if I see that they are kicking ass and we are hitting our numbers, I will be like, here's a raise. Here's what you're doing. Oh, I want a raise. Okay, no problem giving it to you. But when they're not meeting those requirements and they're not going above the bare minimum, I'm not going to reward you just for hitting bare minimum. Because at the end of the day, I'm renting your time, right? So we're doing a swap here. I'm renting your time for you to do the job at this level. But if you go above and beyond and I see those numbers, I will fight for you and you'll fight for yourself and let's give you a raise.
So now you started employing, you were at 28 years old, right? So you were pretty young, to be going out there and employing people and, I mean, really being responsible for like putting food on their table.
Yes.
What's that like? What advice do you have for a young entrepreneur that really wants to get out there and build a team?
So first, you absolutely need to know your numbers. That's where it starts, because if you know your numbers and you get these feelings of like, I'm stressed out, how am I going to do this? Your numbers will tell you everything. So you're like, okay, I need to start off. I need to hire someone. I need a, you know, first position's usually like an accounting or assistant. How much is their salary? How much is my overhead per month? How much work do I have coming in? Do I not pay myself and pay that person so I can get more work? And then you start doing the math on things and it all starts making sense. And so for us, even as we grow, I constantly ask my accounting person, our COO, what are our numbers? Because if I'm going to add a position, I need to make sure it's bringing X revenue and we can feed all these families. Because yeah, it's a lot. Thinking at every night, there's about 10 families, including my own, that I feed every month and that we have to keep, you know, keep it and pay them on time. So we've been in a very good financial situation because by my early mentor, she taught me numbers, 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 money, savings, X, Y, and Z to be successful and profitable in business.
I think having a mentor is the most important thing that you can do, especially if you don't have strong parental figures, you know, in your house. So the importance of having a mentor is the best educator, the best education, the best person to, you know, the best way to find somebody that you want to emulate and set yourself up for success. So I'm glad you've made several references to how important mentorship is. Have you experienced a lot of turnover? Like how consistent has the 10 to 11 people been? Like what's that challenge been like? Because I feel like everybody... I mean, it's the thing in business, right? Nobody can keep anybody.
You're asking some great questions. So absolutely. There was turnover a lot in the beginning because did not have the money to pay what these other companies were paying. And then finally, as we started going on, we were able to pay way better. This is the team I have right now. This is the best we've ever paid. And we want to pay even more. But again, the numbers have to make sense. And also turnover, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I was not the best leader at 28, 29, 30. I'm still trying to improve all the time as a leader. And I know absolutely there were things in how I led that probably caused people to quit, that caused probably people to be unhappy here because the type of demanding leader I was. And so again, what got me to be like, how do I prevent this from happening again in the future? The turnover, either by pay or by me. Mm-hmm. I put people in place. I brought on a COO. I brought an accounting person. I got my mentor. And now we're doing pretty good with retention and we want to keep people here. But I've learned too, besides money, you have to grow the right people and hire the right people. And if they don't fit, excuse my language, your fucking culture, you get them out as quick as possible because these people will be cancer and they will ruin this beautiful team that you have. So everyone knows in our company, we have our core values. You violate them constantly, there's the door. I don't have time for this. I will give you the resources to be so successful at PSS, but if you cannot abide by our core values, you're out of here. Because the last team I had, we had some rotten apples and those rotten apples ruined the entire bunch. And now it's very sacred here. And we're like, we will never be in that position again, ever. Like, I don't care how good you are. I will let you go.
Everything you just said was incredible. Every question that I had in my mind was the next sentence that you just said. Thanks. So I was going to lead you to talk about all those things. I had a feeling I love you. You're awesome.
Thank you.
So, I mean, it's true. I mean, you listen to any entrepreneurial podcast or, you know, anybody in business that's actually made something. It's very common that when you're young, you have a lot to learn when it comes to managing people. And it's a fine line to walk. You can't get walked all over. And a lot of people make that mistake too, right? Just like everything in life, there is a balance. What a segue to work-life balance.
Oh,
so
God.
You're the mompreneur, right? So talk about work-life balance. Like when did you have time to build a family? And what's that been like?
So my business, I sound this weird, but it was my first husband and it was the first thing like in a way I ever birthed because that's what a business is. You have to feed it and maintain it to like get it to grow. And so I was single for 8 years. I didn't have like boyfriends, you know, I was just really concerned about growing my business. And then finally, when I was 31, I met my husband. And immediately we like hit it off. And within a year, we got married. And within a year, we had our son. So it was very fast track, but that's, I'm not going to lie, it got really tough, super tough owning a business and having employees and being a wife and then being a mom was just hard. And so I could see why a lot of women, maybe it's hard for them in business, because as a wife and a mom, you have more responsibilities on your plate. Because I do look at someone like you, like a CEO that runs your company. And I it was weird. I was telling my trainer this morning, I was like, you know, before I go on with him, like, I want to ask him, does he do his laundry? Does he do his meal prep? Does he do the family planning? You know, like, does his wife do it? Does he outsource it? Because I'm serious. There's nothing wrong with it, but many male CEOs, I want to do a survey on that. And then I want to ask women. And then I want to ask ourselves, what can we do to delegate that? Not to our husbands, but maybe to bringing more help on, so it could free up our time, because that's what we end up doing. And I think that's what ends up bringing us, like, I can't manage this all. Yeah, you weren't meant to. You have to delegate those things to other people.
Right.
And I would say the hardest part of balancing my life right now is my fitness. Yeah.
It's hard. It's really hard to take care of yourself. I mean, especially in the way that you want, it's hard to put it at the top of the priority list, especially when you're feeding other mouths. Right. Yes. When your business is other people's livelihood, right? You have an extra responsibility. And if you don't realize that as a business owner, you're fucking out of touch. Sorry for the pardon the French, but you are out of touch. You know, with me, so I'm a CEO of this, but not my day job. My day job is I work for a national GC. I am the director of this new business line that we got going. And before that, I was an executive for a national account, basically a big client that we have in major markets. A client that everybody's heard of, let's put it that way. And it was really hard. Like, when I did 75 hard for the first time, which is like 2 workouts a day, it's reading 10 pages of a book, gallon of water, all this stuff, right? Like, it's all this stuff. And I started it 4 weeks after my son was born. And it was, I think the hardest part about it was finding a way. Anybody can work really hard and anybody can push all responsibilities aside and focus on yourself to do the fitness thing and to become better and all that stuff. It's finding that balance where I am not putting extra weight on my wife to do that stuff. You know what I mean? That wasn't something that I realized. Like, I've never had an issue with work ethic, right?
Yeah.
Like, I hate running. I trained and I ran a marathon in three and a half hours this year. My problem is that I will shut out. Thank you. I will shut out all of the people that matter to me in my life that need my love and need me to carry some of the load, including my wife. You know what I mean? Too often I put her on the back burner, and what I'm concentrating on now, and I'm not perfect, but I'm getting better, is if I want to do all of these things here, I can't have any excuse not to be there for my wife. Even something as, and I don't mean folding laundry and doing meal prep and all that stuff, because I do that stuff. Even sitting on the couch with her and watching TV after my son goes to bed and being present.
Yeah.
I can't give that stuff up, you know? No. And it's hard, but it's, you know, when you think about, like, in every movie when you're a kid and there's like the dad that is focusing on work and doesn't have enough time for their kids, and whether it's like Hook or, you know, The Little Giants, where the little kid has, you know, runs into the end zone to see his dad because he's always working. Being a man, for me, or not even just being a man, but being a woman and a mom and the leader of a household, being part of any kind of family means you have to be present, right? It's not just, it's not just providing financially, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's my spiel. But I do want to ask you, because it's something that I see as a problem. It bothers me a lot. Mm-hmm. Young women, the more young women I talk to, are disgusted by the idea of having kids. And I don't use that word lightly.
Oh, I know. I know. I didn't want kids.
What are your thoughts? I don't even know what else to say, but other than, like, what are your thoughts on to young women, and what would you say to them about?
I think a lot of it has to do with the type of home environment you grow up in. And like I said, because I lost my mom at 4 and there was things going on in my home, I was like, I never want to have kids. I never, because it's scary, like, either to lose your child or, you know, the whole love thing, or how am I going to love someone if I never knew how to love myself or I didn't feel loved? And so, not like I said, till I went to therapy, I started unraveling all that. But then when I met my husband, he's like, do you want kids? Do you want to get married? I was like, no. And no. Year later, married with kids, other kid. Right. And what I have to say is it was the best decision I've ever made. Best thing ever. But I had to do a lot of work for that. So what I'm trying to get at is, when people say, when at such a young age, I think everyone says no. But when you get to mid and, you know, mid 20s, late 20s, early 30s, and you still have that same feeling, really start tapping into questions of, like, why? Does it have to do with my past? Does it have to do with, like, I'm scared? Does it have to do with resources? Because it's so expensive raising a kid. My son's daycare is $1,600 a month. That is like a mortgage in some places, you know? And when you start answering those things, maybe you'll really see like, no, I actually do want one. Or if you've never been in a home where the man was the man in a good way, and the provider made you feel safe, where as a woman, you don't have to be masculine. You get to be in your feminine. Because a lot of women, I'm a type A woman, but with my husband, I am submissive. There's nothing wrong with that. And I am feminine with him because he makes me feel safe. And a lot of women maybe don't realize that either, is they need to be with people that make them feel safe so they can be motherly and loving and feminine with that. But yeah, early on, I think if you ask a lot of young women, they're like, no. But then it changes over time. Look at me. Yeah. I changed. Yeah.
I mean, so I think it's a very important point. I was speaking a few weeks ago with a young woman in my neighborhood. I talked to a lot of, you know, people. I'm in between a lot of people in my neighborhood and their high school age kids, right? Like they're in their late 40s. I'm in my 30s and, you know, I'm just closer. And one of the things that I was telling her was my wife was never the type to say like she didn't want kids, but she has told me, and she has told me that a lot of her friends, they hit like the late 20s age. And like something kind of clicks, or like early 30s, and something kind of clicks where they're like they have this like instinct and desire all of a sudden to be a mother and to have to be in that feminine, you know? So I don't know if you agree with that, but I just tell young people, like, just don't make any decisions. Don't make any like, don't make any like brash decisions, you know?
Yeah. Because we change. Leave the door open. The same as it might 20, change. And people are waiting now till their 30s to have kids. And I just met some more women in their 40s having their first kid. It's just times are changing with it. They really are.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the same time, I'm glad that I waited. I thought that I was going to have a kid when I was 19, but I ended up not having one until I was 31. And I'm better for that, because I'm not saying just pop out kids irresponsibly. Like, I am a much better man at 31 and now in my mid 30s than I was at my early 20s. Right. I wasn't
ready. So glad. So, I'm so glad you and I both waited to the same age, 31, to have like a kid. Or wait, no, I was actually 34, but I waited.
Right. So where do you take it now? Where does the mompreneur take her business? What's the next step? Is it increase profit where you're at? Is it grow the team to be bigger, different states? What do you think?
That is a great, again, such a, I love the questions you ask. That's so, I'm not going to get into it too much, but I am going to give you my aha moment. Last year, I had a pulmonary embolism. I had two blood clots in my right lung. And if you know what that is, you know that 1 out of 3 people die immediately when they get blood clots in their lungs. It goes, because it goes through your heart and they usually get stuck there. Mm-hmm. And so when I was in the hospital bed, I asked myself, why am I doing this? What does my next chapter look like? What does God want for me? What do I want for myself? And what changes do I need to make happen? And in that moment, I was like, okay, I want to get this business right now to run 90% without me. I want to do more impact, like speaking on podcasts. I was doing a lot of high schools at the time, going back to high schools and speaking. I want to write a book about having a blood clot, how you can survive it and it not mess up your whole life, because it's mentally the most scariest thing that could happen. And you have a lot of PTSD from it. I also want to acquire another construction business, you know, instead of starting one from scratch, I want to find someone that wants out. I don't know if you listen to her, Cody Sanchez. Love her.
I love Cody Sanchez. I want to be Cody Sanchez.
I want to go to one of her classes. But like, she had an aha moment for me where she's like, why start another business? Go buy one. And I'm like, the 7 D's, divorce, disease, you know, all the other D's she says. And I'm like, I need to find a business like that.
Yeah.
And maybe I acquire that business. So the numbers have to make sense. I think revenue is vanity. So it's not much about to me, but at the end of the day, it's like, why am I doing all this? It's to leave a legacy, not just for me and my family. It's also the lives that I get to impact of people coming into this door at my company. My job and your job as leaders, whether you own a business or not, is to make sure people leave better than they came to you. And so that's been a very big aha moment since last October on my clotversary of 10/7. Yes.
That's amazing. And it doesn't surprise me that you are a Cody Sanchez fan, because she is an absolute badass. However, also very feminine, you know, in the feminine with her husband, which I find to be an interesting dynamic. Right.
Love the dynamic. Love it.
It's an awesome dynamic. So I don't want to take up too much of your day. I know that you have a business to go run. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you would like to, you know, get out to the world?
No, we covered everything. I would just want to say is if you have a dream that was placed in your heart for a reason, that you need to come up with a plan of action supported by really good people to help you get there. And you need to create the plan and know that success does not go like this. It's like this, and then you get there. And then just to know you're going to evolve. So, yeah, all the time. Have to evolve
so
all the time.
All I was going to say was for the people in audio, because most are on Spotify. The first this was her finger going up in a linear direction.
Yeah.
And then the second this was all of her fingers going all over the screen. So, so yeah. That's what she meant, but it's a mess. Yeah, it's yes. A mess. Ups and downs for sure. Well, Natasha, I really appreciate you coming on. This is going to be an amazing episode for a lot of people for a lot of reasons.
You.
And I'm very interested to see what you do next, especially with everything that you said, you know, could be coming in the future. So I hope this isn't the last time that I have you on.
No, I'm excited to come back on when we hit our next milestone in the company.
And yeah, you'll have to let me know when that happens. And
I will.
Can people reach out to you? Where can they find you?
100%. Instagram is the best way, Mamapreneur, or they can go on LinkedIn, you know, Natasha Melendrez, and message me. And I'm always willing to help others because that's how I got where I'm at, by people helping me.
So yeah, on Instagram, very easy, at Mama, MAMAPreneur, like the last half of entrepreneur.
Yep.
And like I said, I love that. So again, I appreciate you coming on. Everybody, this is the Construction Mentor Podcast. You can hit this up on Spotify, Apple, YouTube. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok at The Construction Mentor, and we will see you.